The Grizzly Berry Cafe podcast is brought to you by our pals over at Gazelle.com. When you've got used consumer electronics that you need to convert into cold, hard, or soft, lukewarm cash, don't sell them, kids. Gazelle them. The Grizzly Berry Cafe is also brought to you by Cobra Eye Radar, a sleek and compact detection unit that provides you with state-of-the-art radar and laser detection technology. Find out more at Cobra.com.
Welcome into the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. Hey, my friend. Today on the train, I was riding home.
And, all right. I'm with you. I've followed this story completely so far.
Stay with me. Are you with me?
Yeah.
What would you do if you saw this? Would you clam up and not say anything like I did? Or would you get up and be proactive? No.
Two homeless people having intercourse. Is that where this is going?
I was very proactive. I got my video camera out. And I submitted it to hotforhomeless.com.
Yeah.
No, this guy, two rows up and to the left of me, was making this row his own. He took off his shoes. He put his feet up on the seat in front of him. Do you ever sit on the train where, you know, those the double seats sort of facing each other? They're sort of at the end of each row.
Sure, yeah.
And so he decides he's going to take up the entire four seats. Mm. And you know, you can totally tell he's important because he's on a cell phone and wearing a button-down shirt. Mm. So, or at least he thinks he's important.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
He has his shoes off, and he just puts his feet up on the seats in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he decides, oh, I'm going to lay down. So he lays down and puts his feet up on the window. And I'm sitting there. I couldn't believe what this guy was doing. First of all, I would never sit in one of those seats ever again. But who takes their shoes off and their socks and puts their feet up on other people's seats? It's not like he's in his own living room.
Right. You're preaching to the choir here. Or even someone else's living room. You are preaching to the choir here, my man.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that in your living room.
I might do it at yours. I recently was on an airplane, and I saw somebody doing basically the exact same thing. And they put their bare feet up against the bulkhead, you know, like of where the lavatory is concealed in the...
Yeah, those are the extra legroom seats, right? The bulkhead seats.
Mm-hmm.
So he's paying for extra legroom, but I don't know that he must not have read on his ticket that it didn't also include, you know, taking your shoes off and sticking them on a window.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you say anything to him?
No, I was several rows back, but he'd propped his feet up so high against the bulkhead, like the whole plane could see. And this is actually going to turn into a great seg here in a minute. You could tell, like, the stewardesses were all attempting to give him the stink eye, and I couldn't tell because I was behind him by, like, maybe 8 or 10 rows. I couldn't tell if, like, the stink eye wasn't reaching the target. Was he, like, choosing to ignore the stink eye, right? Because you couldn't fall asleep like that. If you fell asleep with your legs propped at such a high angle, they just slump and fall down.
Right.
You know, like, he had to be consciously keeping them at that height. So,
yeah, he'd have to have his knees engaged the entire time.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, it's quite strange. But there are places, not only in this country, but worldwide, where people, they just aren't raised with manners. And sometimes we must travel with these people. Sometimes they find ways into our social sphere. And it's a blight.
It really
is. It's a blight. Now, I want to tell you why this is a great seg. Are you familiar with... let's give them some props. ABC, which you know is a television network owned by Disney...
Correct.
...is attempting in the year 2011 to make air travel seem thrilling and sexy...
With
a new TV series, which is now in its second week, maybe about to start its third, called Pan Am.
Right, right.
Now, in
right.
order to do this, they did have to set the series 50 years ago before air travel became the most awful thing known to humanity.
Right.
A blight, if you will.
It's like set in the time when Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can.
Mm-hmm.
Where you had those really hot stewardesses. They had to be single. This is no joke. They had to be single.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be under 30, I think, or under 35 to get the job at Pan Am. Mm-hmm.
Right, and they had to, like, conform to certain physical thing, you know what I mean? Like, if they didn't like the way you looked, you know, all that sort of stuff, which you would just think is insane. that you could discriminate against somebody based on that type of stuff. They absolutely did. And so I've got to give props to ABC because, as I said, I don't know that there's anything more dreadful or miserable in, you know, in maybe like terrorists. That would be it. And then, of course, there's that obvious link, right? Because I think something – it's foggy to me, but I think something bad happened to our country, give or take 10 years ago on a specific date, dealing with both air travel and terrorists. Air travel is the worst, and they're really trying to, like, romanticize it. And, oh, these young, good-looking people and handsome pilots and beautiful stewardesses traveling the world and blah, blah. Sorry, ABC. And don't get me wrong. Like, they're trying to – it's interesting. They're good actors and actresses. It's compelling storytelling in the way they've interwoven some people. They've already created, like, this espionage subplot. But you're never going to get me over the hump of it's – this is taking place on an airplane. Or, like – nothing cool ever happens in an airport, ever. Only bad things happen in airports.
That's why I can't. That's why I can't watch that show, Cash Cab. You're not getting, you're not making money in a cab. Are you kidding me? That can't be real.
Have you seen Pan Am yet?
No, I haven't seen it. But you know, I read an article the other day about it, and it's fascinating that this they went to great lengths for historical accuracy.
They clearly spent a lot of money on this series. Make no mistake about that.
Not only did they spend a lot of money, you know, because airplane aficionados, and I didn't realize this. I mean, I guess I probably did in a sort of, you know, cursory way, that they're nuts. Airplane aficionados and historians are off the charts nuts.
Right on.
You know, you think comic book nerds, right, that comic book nerds are off the charts and they know every detail, or even Star Trek fans, right? They can tell you why this particular E-class of starship was, you know, not flown during this mission, and they can tell you call letters and such and all this on all these different things. But you know, airplane aficionados are off the charts. And what they did for this show, there's this one guy, I guess he like lives in New Jersey or something, and he has an incredible collection of 1950s airplane memorabilia from inside the aircraft. In fact, in his house or in his garage or warehouse or whatever, he has recreated the inside of a Pan Am flight. I mean, this is this guy's hobby. I guess he just goes in there and hangs out. Replete with the ashtrays, the types of china, the types of silverware, the types of teaspoons. So Pan Am, the show, consulted with him. And very often they're borrowing items and they're also making replicas, but they've paid a you know, all sorts of borrowing fees to this guy to get them on the show. In fact, one thing that they said, there was a specific smoke alarm or seatbelt button or sound effect from the 1950s, and they were at pains to come up with it. They were thinking, well, we need to be accurate to the time. We can't just put a bong, you know, and hope that it works. So they consulted this guy, and turns out he had actually had original, like, audio tape recordings, like those long spool-to-spool recordings. He used to go on these flights and, like, record the inside of the airplanes. And they found the sound on one of these tapes. And they managed to use that and recreate it. I mean, down to the sound effect, this is what this show has done. So you've enjoyed this show, huh?
No, you've misinterpreted me. I've not.
So why do you love this show so much?
I just can't. God help you if you think that. But they, as they touted on all the teases, 16 million people watched the first episode.
Get out!
And I'm sure that was enough for about 15 million of them.
I think what they're trying to do is do another Mad Men style show.
Yes, I think so. Like, that's clearly the aesthetic they are aping. And like I said, it's not like they have bad actors or actresses or anything like this. But I think you hit the nail on the head right there. So. I saw that. I also watched an episode of Brad Meltzer's Decoded.
Oh, you did? Is this the first one you've seen?
It is, because, you know, their second season, or maybe it's the third, I don't know, is about to start, like in another week.
Second season. Oh, there's a whole rash of good shows about to start. So,
So I really liked it, as you suspected I would. You know, it's got a lot of that sort of like fringy, paranormal, conspiracy type stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I dig that type of thing. It's interesting to see, though, you know, all I'd ever seen of Brad Meltzer would be like a picture here or there, like taken at a comic convention, which must have been like out of focus or really far away because, you know, he's quite prominent on the show. He's like the host. He really doesn't match what like that mental image that I have of him is.
Yeah, I thought he would be like an old sort of Rasputin character, you know, like a long beard with like a squirrel living inside of it.
I see.
Living up somewhere in Ireland, writing these books. But no, he's quite handsome. He's bald. I think, you know, he chooses to shave his head. He's quite handsome. Yeah, he's a smart
guy. Obviously, I've read four of his novels, which I like quite a bit. And if you're interested to read some of Brad Meltzer's novels, I would characterize him to you as I did on a previous episode of The Grizz many moons ago. He is Dan Brown light.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But yeah, he also wrote a year's worth, maybe over a year's worth, of the relaunched Justice League of America series from a couple years back, which was excellent. He clearly had like this longstanding fascination, not only with the various eras of the League, like that was a real theme that ran through his run. Like this would be a wink to the Detroit League, or this would be a wink to Justice League International. But he loved the Red Tornado, who is typically like a D-lister on the Justice League roster. But when Meltzer wrote Justice League, Red Tornado was right out in front. So if any of that sounds intriguing to you, then check out Brad Meltzer's novels or his run on Justice League, or his series Decoded, which both Clayton and I like, which is on the History Channel.
Yeah, I watched. I seem to be watching all of those episodes over and over again because there's only, I think, 10 episodes of that first season. You can get it on demand. Mm-hmm. It's available actually.
You're
on Netflix.
You're right about that. It is exactly 10. I think I read that in the description myself.
It's also on Netflix streaming, so you can watch it for free on Netflix streaming. They have all of the first season on there. I think I've watched a couple of the episodes a number of times. The John Wilkes Booth episode is fantastic. The fact that, you know, they put forth this theory, and it's backed up by family members of John Wilkes Booth, that he lived, that he was not, in fact, killed at the barn about a week later on that manhunt, that he actually lived, was not even at the barn, and lived well into the early 1900s and had married and under a different name and all sorts of things. So that's a fascinating episode. And you would actually – what episode did you watch before I say this?
Well, I saw actually bits and pieces of a couple because, you know, they play hour to hour and I came in at the half hour. So have you seen the one about America's Stonehenge?
Yes.
The one, it's like outside of Atlanta, Georgia or whatever.
Yeah. You
like,
know, what? A few years ago in Wired magazine, they had a whole story about this thing and I was fascinated by it.
Right. I didn't even know this existed until I saw this episode.
Me neither. Until this article, and this guy, we assume, or a group of individuals, millionaires or whomever, put forth commissioned these giant Stonehenge-like rocks that are carved with some weird sayings and down in Georgia. I think it happened in like the late 70s, and still no one has been able to figure out exactly where they came from, what they mean, and why they're there. Which is
pretty cool. It's quite mysterious.
There's another episode that I love too about America's secret society, the hidden the spy ring, the Culper spy ring that basically helped win the Revolutionary War. Really, really neat. Like all of these spies working behind the scenes and George Washington may have been one of the greatest spies in American history. And there's actually a lot of spies, the folks that worked at the CIA that think that, or at the FBI, there's a statue there and they can't believe that the statue that's at the headquarters is of this individual because they don't think that he was a good spy. They think that actually George Washington was probably the greatest spy in American history. That episode is my favorite. That probably in the John Wilkes Booth episode.
Very, very interesting. So, yeah, if that sort of thing is up your alley, we both endorse Decoded.
Oh, and Dexter
Brad
starts.
Knows. Yeah, Dexter. Now, I'm glad you brought that up because my wife and I have been making our way through season 5, and I think we're very near the end. I think we've only got an episode or two to go. And I want to say this because not only you but several other people had said to me that the real highlight of season 5 has been Julia Stiles, who is an incredibly irritating actress.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you that.
She does dreadful work. She's often cast in a role where I'm expected to believe that she's beautiful to someone other than her mom. False. But people said to me, including you, she'll really surprise you with Dexter season 5. And I'd like to say I lump her in a category of annoying actresses that came to prominence in the 90s, that it also includes the uber-annoying Claire Danes.
I'll go so far as to say Kirsten Dunst.
Uh-huh. Right on. Also in this group. Claire Danes is about to get a new show on Showtime that I've seen promoed. It's called Homeland, and it seems like the dumbest premise ever. And it's so irritating to me because when I drive into Chikara Wrestle Factory, as I'm the head trainer there, I pass all these billboards advertising the advent of this new Showtime show where I have to see Claire Danes' big ugly face all over Philadelphia, and that's a little irritating. So back to what I'm saying, right, about Julia Stiles. It is Julia Stiles, right? I'm getting her name right, aren't I?
Sure, sure.
While I will admit, this is probably the best thing she's ever done. Two things. One, every time she's about to get killed, I want her to get killed in the show. And two, I'll tell you who the real surprise is of season 5, in my opinion, is Peter Weller, who, of course, is best known as RoboCop. He was RoboCop in the first two RoboCop films at the end of the 90s, beginning, or end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s. And he comes back as this, in the process of being terminated, police cop guy who's like in the autumn of his career, and he's about as dirty as it gets.
Yeah, he's sort of angling to try to make some money from the cops, trying to spy. He's also sort of working almost like as a private detective on the side, and dirty guy.
Unbelievable.
Isn't he like, creepy?
He's so good in this role.
Yeah.
This is how authentic he is in that role. You really think that that's how Peter Weller would be, like walking down, he'd be dressed like that character, he would talk to you like that character, to have that creepy wink. He's been the real surprise to me. So I really, really enjoyed Peter Weller in that role. And two, you know, having, there's kind of like a fun thing going on there, right, with that dynamic, because he used to be RoboCop.
Right.
And now it's like, here it is, right, it's 25 years since the original Robo, 24 years, I guess, right? 87, since the original RoboCop came out. So, you know, he's aged appropriately. And it's like now he's at the end of his police career, and here he is, like, you know. So I've really enjoyed that. But as always, as we've talked about a number of times here, although Dexter really sort of like inverts the way typical shows like this work, and that the guy who would typically be the antagonist is in the role of the protagonist, the thing that makes it so very, very compelling, and I don't know who to credit for this, although I'm going to seg right into something else of this. I don't know who writes this. Like, I know it's based on a series of novels, but I'm sure the novelist is not writing the TV series.
No, I think the first few episodes that you and I had watched together when I tried to rope you into the show, those were based on the Jeffrey Lindsay novels. And I think he still continues to write some of them, like Darkly Dreaming Dexter, I think, was the first.
Isn't that the series? Isn't that what the whole series is called? Or just the first novel?
I think it might have just been called the first novel. I read the first novel. And, you know, that first episode, that whole early arc of the show, the first season, is based on that novel. And that novel is really, really good. It's spot on. I mean, it's ripped right from the book. There's not a lot of a deviation there in his character. You can Anthony, what is his name? Michael C. Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
is spot on. I mean, perfect casting.
Mm-hmm. And I think the problem he's going to have when this thing runs its course is, how could you ever see him in any other role?
Right, and even
like
his
he'll
voice,
always
right?
be Dexter, right? And he narrates the series too.
His narration is so fantastic. And then I don't know if you pick up, and this is one of my weird skills, that in like the first few syllables of a word of anyone on television, I can tell what actor it is just in a voiceover, like a car commercial or something, and I'll blurt out Richard Dreyfuss. Mm-hmm. It's this really weird skill that I have. Mm. He does all these different commercials, and they're slightly
Michael
creepy.
Hall does.
Yeah, and you'll notice it now that I've said it, but you'll notice some car commercials be like, so you want a good car, one that treats you right, you know, and he does it almost in the Dexter voice, and it's really good, and you're just like, oh, it's slightly creepy, but slightly something kind of disturbing about it. Maybe I want this car, you know. Yeah. Even his voice is iconic in that way.
Mm-hmm. So, have you heard? Now, of course, the sixth season of Dexter is about to bow on, make its debut, so to speak, on Showtime. Any time now, has there been any talk that you've heard, especially considering, you know, the actors who played Dexter and his sister were briefly married and then divorced, which I'm sure makes things kind of uncomfortable on the set for everyone. Have you heard any talk about this could be the last season? I haven't heard that, but I'm not... because I'm always watching a season behind, I try to avoid reading current stuff for fear it's going to... Much like it ruined the swerve at the end of season 4 for me, I'm trying not to read anything current, you know, about, oh, and this person who's not coming back this season, and you're like, well, I know they got killed.
I know that they're doing a bit of a rebooted vision of it. That's all. One thing that I saw and read, that when they come back for the sixth season, the premiere... That it's going to have, I don't know, some sort of a reboot for the series. It's going to pick up a year after the season you're currently watching, season 5. So it'll be a whole year later. And it's going to be, I saw someone write that it's going to be, it's Dexter 2.0. Not quite sure what that means. So, yeah, I don't know. Like he's, I guess, the one thing I did see that he sort of reaches a he kind of gets back to a bit of a normal life again when things a wrench gets sort of thrown into the you know into the works. He doesn't really have to deal with people talking about his dead wife anymore. Like he's gotten on to sort of a normal sense of life again, and then that's where it sort of picks up. So,
Well, in contrast to Dexter, which is the writing for which is outstanding. Whoever you are out there, if you're in the Loyal Egghead Army, 2 million and growing. Take a bow, because you're doing outstanding writing there. On the flip side of this, I want to tell you about something that was recently discussed on another podcast that Clayton and I star in called Daddy on Board, about the effects of programming like SpongeBob SquarePants on young impressionable minds. And they contrasted SpongeBob SquarePants against a slower-paced show called Caillou. Caillou is a show aimed at young children that airs on the PBS Sprout Network. I recently had cause to catch the end credits of an episode of Caillou in which 22 names were listed as the writer for an episode in which nothing happened. Nothing happened in this episode of Caillou.
See, that's the brilliance of it. It's very zen. They needed that many people to make an episode about nothing.
Yeah. In this episode, Caillou, when his mother asked, set the table. 22 people wrote this episode.
Man, we're doing something wrong, right?
We are. I want a piece of that Caillou pie. I would like to have my mind was blown. So, listen, I know we're all over the place. There's one more TV thing I want to jam in here before we take a break and thank one of our show sponsors. And this is some, as much as Clayton and I might like Brad Meltzer's Decoded, as much as we might like Dexter, I would wager to say, at least, I don't know, I'll let you answer this. I am even more fond of the canceled television series Arrested Development.
I knew you were about to go here because I actually drew up – I never write notes for this show. I have a little post-it note here, and right at the top of my list is Arrested Development.
It is one of my very, very favorite
brilliant
series
show.
Of all time, and it was introduced to me by my friend Clayton, as a matter of fact. He bought me the first season as a box set and shipped it to me with a note that said, will you watch this? And
which, by the way,
I did.
Is one of the only ways I can get him to watch these things.
It really is brilliant. It's one of the very best sitcoms of all time. The writing for that is simply outstanding. And the reason this is worth talking about, because you've heard us discussing is the feature film happening. It's on, it's off. Michael Cera's available. He's not available. Well, the series creator from Arrested Development, Mitch Hurwitz, has come out, as has Will Arnett and Jason Bateman, saying Arrested Development is coming back for one more season. They're going to do 9 or 10 more episodes that will air in 2013. And I think that is cause for celebration.
This blew me away when I saw it. I thought this had to be a joke. I saw a tweet earlier tonight. Then I went to the New Yorker's website. That's where the news came from. It was at some sort of, I guess, the New York Film Festival, NewYorkFest.com. But the New Yorker was reporting it. So I guess the news came out of the New York Film Festival here. Down in Tribeca, I suppose. So that very exciting. And the reason that that's happening, and I have to imagine that the reason that's happening is to drum up support for the film. So the television show will come back for one season in the year preceding the release of the feature film. Did you hear that or did you just say that?
Yeah. Well, that as well. Yes.
Yeah. So that I think is, you know, the reason why. So if we I don't know that if we saw an Arrested Development movie suddenly hit theaters, I have to imagine somebody in Hollywood saying to themselves, look, I think there's too many years removed from this for this to be a big hit. Mm-hmm. It might have a sort of a, you know, it might have a cult audience that might go see it, but it's not going to be a big moneymaker for us. I mean, after all, the show was canceled for low ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the thinking is, hey, let's bring the show back. Maybe let's try to mainstream it a little bit. And I think, you know what? I think it was before its time in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because I think The Office, the American version of The Office, despite all odds, was really the first show to sort of make that leap for American television. No laugh track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there had been shows without a laugh track before, of course, but this was, I mean, these were the big ones. And it made sense to not have a laugh track in this situation. Mm-hmm. Of course, the British version of The Office was a huge success, but as Ricky Gervais will say, it failed every focus group. It received the lowest focus group numbers in BBC history.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they did the focus group in the United States, when NBC did it for the American version of The Office, it also got the lowest focus grouped numbers in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, NBC took a big risk on it, and then it became a huge success. And then you've seen a number of shows like this, you know, that don't have a laugh track, that sort of push the envelope in that way. Modern Family is very much like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of those shows that are now on TV, that Up All Night, Parks and Recreation, 30 Rock,
mm-hmm.
Have that same tempo sort of stylistically, and they've been a success for NBC and these other networks. So I think Arrested Development, when it first came out, was just way ahead of its time,
mm-hmm.
and a little too smart.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting comment, that it's too smart. And that's been said of a number of shows. You know, that's not unique in that way to Arrested Development. I always thought it was very intriguing. The late, great Leslie Nielsen had often said about the cancellation of the Police Squad TV series, which ran for only 6 episodes. And if you go back and watch it, at least as like the first move into true absurdist humor on American TV, it was groundbreaking, was Police Squad.
Yeah.
He said that of his series. He said it was too smart. And when he was asked to better qualify that, what he said is, he said, you have to pay attention to what's being said to find the humor. The humor doesn't come out and slap you in the face.
Right.
And the same is true of Arrested Development. Like, you really do need to pay attention to every line. In that way, you know, it's not as ham-fisted, you know, as to me, like King of Queens or, you know, something like that, or Mama's Family. You have to pay a little more attention. Did I soak Mama's Family in enough derision before it came out of my mouth there? Mama's Family.
Come on. Are you going to mock Naomi? Naomi and what's his name living in the basement?
Whoever that guy was, by the way, he was great as that, like, henpecked husband role. You know what I mean? Like, whoever that dude was, he was excellent in that role.
He was always sort of chortling and doubling over, and he was always sort of kowtowing to his wife. It was brilliant. To Naomi, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, whoever that dude was.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to that guy. I hope you're out there. I hope you're doing well. So in any event, well, we talked a whole lot here and didn't thank anybody.
No, but that's good stuff. Hey, tomorrow I'm actually flying out, heading out to San Francisco for the heading out to Cupertino, California. I'll be on Apple's campus for the big iPhone event. So you can follow me on Twitter. I'll be live tweeting from the event.
What do we expect? Can you tease a little bit of what we should expect?
Yeah, I just wrote a column. You can check out the full column I just posted up with some of my latest information from sources and what I expect to happen on foxnews.com on the SciTech page. There, you can check that out. But, and I think actually by the time you hear this, we may already know. But anyway, what I expect to have happen is here, the new iPhone should be called the iPhone 4S. Which is what they did in the during the 3G series. They did iPhone 3G, and then they just did a sort of incremental upgrade to the 3GS and gave it a bit of a speed bump, better camera, obviously the new software and everything. So we'll see the new iPhone, new, you know, 8-megapixel camera probably instead of the 5-megapixel camera. It'll be a lot faster. The new software, you know, iOS 5 will be on there. And I think we're going to get a refresh to the Apple TV, which will be nice. So we're going to get an updated user experience, so updated software on there. And it looks like we're going to have a big content partner that will be added to that mix. So could Hulu Plus be coming to the Apple TV? you know, big content partner. They obviously have Netflix on there already. They have Vimeo. They have MLB and stuff. So of the big content partners that you'd want on it, Hulu Plus is like really the only one that comes to mind. Maybe HBO Go. That would be cool. So that, and we're going to see the new iTunes 10.5, and this will be wireless syncing. So now, if you have an iPad, if you've got an iPhone, if you've got an iPod Touch, iCloud is being rolled out. What that means is you'll never have to sync your device to your computer again. So you can get rid of the cord. All you need to do is update the software. So, you know, take your iPad that you currently have, and when the new software is released this week, or whenever it is, and maybe the next few days, sync it, put the new iOS 5 on your iPad. It's going to have over 250 new features, but you'll never have to sync it again. Anytime you plug it into the wall, you know, to charge it, it'll automatically sync. So that means that any apps that you've downloaded or purchased will, if there's an update, when you plug it in at night just to charge it, they'll automatically update all of your applications. So you never have to sync it to get new, you know, app updates or anything like that. And music will be synced wirelessly, so you don't need to sync it for music purposes anymore or anything. It's going to be a hallelujah moment. No more white cords hanging out all over the place. So that's what I expect to see. And Tim Cook will be there. He'll be the, you know, he's the new CEO, took over for Steve Jobs, who is out with you know, his illness and has left Apple. So we'll see if Steve is there. I doubt there's very highly he's going to be there at all. But anyway, the reason I brought that up, Gazelle.com, baby. You got that old iPhone, you want to get rid of it, and you want to upgrade, or you got an old iPhone 3G, iPhone 3GS, and you want to get the new iPhone 4S or iPhone 5, whatever you want to call it, you know, go to Gazelle.com because they're going to give you money for it. They're going to give you a PayPal payment. They're going to send you a check in the mail. Do whatever you do. You just type in at Gazelle.com the condition that your item is in. Maybe you have an old phone, maybe an old Android device you want to get rid of. Just type it in. You know, it's in good condition, normal condition, perfect condition, whatever. And they'll email you every step of the way once they receive your item. They'll even pay for the shipping. That's how amazing these guys are. And this is like their Super Bowl, the iPhone time, because people want to upgrade. You know, people want to upgrade their iPads at the time, so they make it very easy for you to do. They'll pay for the shipping. They'll even send you a box, and they'll email you every step of the way to let you know, hey, we received your items. You're good to go, and you'll get that payment, and it's fantastic. We love them a whole lot. And I should mention, you know, when you're checking out, that little drop-down menu, it says, how did you hear about us? Just click on Clayton Morris Podcasts, etc. That lets them know that you found out about them from the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. So, yeah, I'm flying out there tomorrow. You must have the packing thing down to a science, right?
The packing thing?
Yeah, you pack and you fly all the time, right? You travel all the time, like packing up your suitcase, getting ready to go.
Yes, I do, and I kind of dread that. Like, you know, that sort of means like it's inevitable. I'm gonna have to go to the airport, which, as we mentioned at the top of the program, is probably the most dreadful thing on the planet, other than terrorism.
I have to say, I'm actually looking forward to the flight tomorrow because I don't have to sit. Well, because I got separate seats, which is great. So, like, my wife and son are coming, and my son now is, I think, at the age where he's not just going to chill out. So, but my seat, I'm not able to sit near them. So I'm stuck like in another section.
Is the section you're stuck in first class?
I wish. That would be brilliant. But no, but you know, because he'll just be, you know, he'll just want to stand. He'll hop up and down. He'll want to climb around. And I think she's stuck. I think she's actually in a middle seat. God forbid. So she's in a middle seat with our 14-month-old. Man, I'm glad I'll be up in an aisle. Because I need to sit in an aisle seat. I'm an aisle guy.
Yes, I agree. Because there's got to be freedom to go to the bathroom without disturbing others.
Exactly. And I go regularly. You know me. I mean, I have a problem. Yeah. So I like to get up and go to the bathroom on a regular basis. And, you know, I can't be... And the worst part is when someone's asleep next to you. I was on a flight not too long ago where I got stuck in a window seat, or like a middle seat, and this guy, I was in the window seat. There was a space in between me, which was great, right? But then the guy at the end, he slept the entire 6 hours, save for like a minute where he woke up, and he just was asleep the whole time. How does anyone do that in the afternoon?
That's a skill.
It was. He slept the entire time. So finally, I just couldn't hold it anymore. I had to, like, try to climb over him. And then he seemed, like, put out. Like, really? You've been sleeping the whole friggin' flight. I'm sorry that I'm stuck over here. You know, some of us aren't wearing Depends right now. We're not just wetting ourselves, although I could be.
That's a great idea for a flight, go on.
Seriously. It's like what NASA, you know, NASA astronauts do, right? They wear Depends.
They're ahead of us. Yeah. They're in the space age, Clayton.
Hey, we saw Bridesmaids the other night.
Oh, did you?
Oh, man, is that funny. Have you seen this? You haven't seen it.
No, but, you know, a lot of people that I do think are very funny are in it.
Kristen Wiig wrote it.
Oh, which, I didn't know that.
Which should tell you about it right off the bat. She's a very, very funny writer, of course, and I find her endlessly entertaining on Saturday Night Live.
She's like the whole show on there right yeah. now, and I think they know it, too. Like, they find ways to put her in everything. Like, there's definitely that, like, I don't know, maybe like teenager demo that like thinks Andy Samberg's where it's at, but I think the rest of everybody else is behind Kristen Wiig. Like, she really carries the show.
She's fantastic, and the movie was not what I anticipated. Right? Like, if you from seeing trailers and such, if you had to tell me what you thought the movie was about, what would you think it was about? I mean, other than the obvious. Like, if you could
I don't know then if it's not about the obvious.
Well, I mean, it is about Bridesmaids, right? But like, when I saw the promos and the trailers, I thought, okay, you know what? This is going to be sort of like The Hangover. You know, like, they're all going to one last hurrah. It's a group of girls. Because the way they cut the trailer, it shows them, like, on an airplane, right? They're going to Vegas. That's such a minuscule portion of this movie. And you know, it's like road trip, like Hangover. Like, they're going to go and party it up, and it's going to be this sort of, you know, misadventure with these wacky group of girls let loose in Vegas or something. I was like, I really wanted to see it because, you know, it has like a 92% still on Rotten Tomatoes. And guys and girls like love it. So it's one of those crossover films that has like appeal for guys to go see a chick flick, you know. But it is, I laughed the entire time. It was that funny. And those, and sort of like belly laughs, where there were certain scenes where just like sort of uncontrollable laughter. It was that good. Very, very good. And I was blown away by, because the guy, and I got to look up his name here. There's a police officer in the movie. And I was telling you last week about the IT crowd, the IT crowd, whatever it's called.
Sure.
And one of the lead guys from that sitcom, that British sitcom, is in it.
Oh.
He plays the police officer. And he's very, very good. And very, very
You saw this in a theater?
No. We just got it on... it's on, you know, on iTunes streaming, or I think we put it on Amazon Amazon streaming.
I see.
For $4.99. Let me see these cast. And again, if you're into the IT crowd, if you're a nerd and you like nerd related stuff, you will enjoy the IT crowd, about these three individuals who work in an IT department in Britain. Very, very funny. The two characters, Moss and Roy. God, I can't find his name. Anyway, but he's in it. So go see Bridesmaids. It is a hoot. I promise you that.
I'm not disagreeing with you. So, a moment or two ago, we'd sent out some tweets asking you, loyal eggheads, to send us your guilty pleasure song selections. And you have responded. We've gotten some suggestions. So, I'm going to throw some out there. There's one that I think already might be the front runner here. From a variety, and these are by the way coming in through the Grizzly Bear Cafe Twitter. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe. RoboDuke, who often sends in his suggestions, wrote "Somebody's Watching Me" by Rockwell, which is certainly up there. Yeah. And that's a really, you know that whole story of Rockwell, right? He was like Berry Gordy's son or whatever, but he changed his name and did the fake British accent because he wanted to see if he could get a recording contract without his father's knowledge, like without using the family name.
Yeah, it's like Bob Dylan, Jacob Dylan style.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much Michael Jackson singing backup vocals for him on Somebody's Watching Me might have helped that out. Somebody sent in F.K. Kirsch writes to us, "Chasing Pavements" by Adele. which I don't think we're going to be playing today. An interesting one. Salon underscore 87 writes, build me up Buttercup, which is often used to great comedic effect in film and TV. Do you know who the artist is? I don't know who does that one, build me up Buttercup.
I don't.
Is it like the Lovin' Spoonful or somebody like that? I don't know. You know, incidentally, the guy from the Lovin' Spoonful, that lead singer, is the guy that did the theme, that really catchy theme to Welcome Back, Kotter. Did you know that?
Welcome back. Well, for which song?
Who is the artist for Build Me Up Buttercup? I just guessed that it was the Lovin' Spoonful, but I'm not putting any weight behind that.
Build Me Up. I'm going to find out for you. The Foundations.
The Foundations. Very,
is that right?
Very interesting.
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah, I think so.
Who'd have guessed it?
Yeah. I've never, I was trying to find it here. I guess it is. The Foundations. Yeah, it is The Foundations, because all these bands had covered it. I never heard of that. I never heard.
The Desert Pope writes to us, 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton. I agree with you that it is a guilty pleasure. I agree with you. I don't know that we'll play that one today.
Here's one that I saw in our Twitter stream that you and I will absolutely veto. Trifster writes us.
That's exactly what I'm looking at.
Trifster writes us and says, Matthew Wilder's Break My Stride. Absolutely not.
Not a guilty pleasure.
One of my favorites.
That is an awesome song. Awesome. And a one-hit wonder from 1983. Matthew Wilder. You know, he was born Matthew Wiener. That's no doubt why he changed his stage name. Matthew Wilder.
So.
And you know, he went on to be a great songwriter and producer for a lot of other artists, including like Christina Aguilera, Hannah Montana. He was even nominated. He did a lot of the music for Mulan for Disney and was nominated for an award for that, too. So he's gone on to have a great career in the music industry, but he's really only known for that one hit of his, Matthew Wilder's Break My Stride from 1983. And while I would love to play that because I love that song, that was actually, I think, one of the first 45s I ever owned. Not a guilty pleasure.
No.
Trifster. No. Put the windows down and sing that at the top of your lungs.
Sing it proud.
Vintown writes, and this is another one that I say is not a guilty pleasure, Heart and Soul by T'Pau.
Yeah, me too.
Which is another one-hit wonder, right? Except these guys are from like 1986, I want to say. And of course, you know that's a Star Trek reference, right?
Right.
The name of the group.
Yeah, that was from a 60s Star Trek episode.
Right, it was like an ambassador from the Klingons or something like that, or a relative of Spock's was named T'Pau.
Yeah, I think so. I think it may have actually been, Star Trek fans, correct me if I'm wrong, I'll be ashamed if I am, but I think it's from that episode called Amok Time, where Spock is going through that sort of biological change. I don't know if you ever saw that episode where suddenly he's like smashing things and he's becoming violent because it's like mating season for him, and he's sort of like smashing things and he has to get back to Vulcan. He has to like fight Kirk with those giant sort of pendulum razor blade sort of sticks. And I think T'Pau is sort of the ringleader Vulcan who's in charge of the ceremony. It's really bizarre. It's a great episode. It's considered usually one of the top 10 best Star Trek episodes. If I'm not mistaken, she is T'Pau. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Interesting. So, yeah, but also not a guilty pleasure, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. Scrolling down a little bit further from this one from – this might be at the top of the list, and I don't know, but you tell me. Natalie Morris wrote us earlier this week and wrote, hey, at Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, I submit this for next week's guilty pleasure song, Roxette's Dangerous.
A Roxette song.
And I have to, you know, when she submitted that, I said, I think that's going to take the top spot until someone can knock it off. So right now, that's sort of sitting pretty at the top spot.
I would say in terms of, the Roxette catalog, that's maybe one of the least guilty ones. If you'd come in with Fading Like a Flower or The Look, I might say, yeah, that's a little guilty, but Dangerous.
I don't know. The Look, I love that song, though.
That one's a little embarrassing, I think.
It is embarrassing, but I loved it. I had a couple of those singles growing up. Big fan.
Yeah, right. Roxette, though, in general, I think they're not like a guilty pleasure. And, you know, they're way more popular in Europe, and they're from Europe. They're way more popular over there than they are over here. Now, a couple of people had written to us on our personal Twitter accounts. For example, ECW Faithful writes to us, Float On by Modest Mouse. which is obviously much more current than some of these other songs that we're talking about here. Horseman Forever writes, Around the Bend by Asteroid Galaxy Tour. I don't know that song. Is that like a cover of the Creedence Clearwater Revival, Up Around the Bend? Or am I just imagining that?
I don't think so. Yeah, I've never heard that. No.
A.B. Summer writes to us, any song that mentions tequila, I would wager to say that Tequila Sunrise by the Eagles is not a guilty pleasure song. Although, there's probably at least a half dozen Jimmy Buffett songs that do fall into that category.
Well, there is a Sammy Hagar, was it Moss Tequila? But that really is not a guilty pleasure.
Sammy Hagar, this one's kind of on the fence, but I totally think this is like a windows down, sing it at the top of your lungs type. I really like... Your Love is Driving Me Crazy by Sammy Hagar.
Really?
On the other hand, I do put the windows up for I Can't Drive 55.
Yeah, he was on Fox and Friends not too long ago. I had a chance to talk with him. I was joking with him because he just had like a t-shirt on, like he just rolled, like he rolled in out of bed, but he's just a fun guy, really nice guy too. Like he was a treat. Andrew Dice Clay was on like a few weeks ago too. He was actually surprisingly really gracious, really funny, and really nice.
Very thankful to be back on television after 15 years.
I would think so. Being back on Entourage and hoping things are happening for him. All right, we'll narrow it down to a guilty pleasure coming up at the end of today's
right. Hopefully, we'll
episode.
Get some more suggestions before the time is up. Because I think probably for the safety of all, Roxette is the forerunner at this point. Although I did really like these suggestions, it's just that several of them really they don't really fall into that bag, you know.
Yeah, I want to get a quick plug in here for our sports show because this week we're doing something really special here on Grizzly Productions. Over the course of the next month, you know what it is, we're giving away some. We're going to give away three amazing devices that total about $1,000. And we're doing this on every one of our shows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a chance to win on everyone on all of the shows. So you have
That's amazing.
Chance. You have like, what is it? You have six chances. The Sports Report is the first show doing the contest this week. So if you didn't listen to yesterday's episode, you have to go over. Paul Roberts hosts the Sports Report. Just go to grizzlyproductions.tv and listen to the show, because what he's done in the show, there's a bit of an Easter egg. There's a trivia question that you need to answer.
Hmm.
It may require that you listen to a previous episode to find that answer out in the sports report. But then you'll go over to our Grizzly Productions Facebook page. We have a brand new Facebook page just devoted to the network. And you'll post over there and you'll answer that question. There will be a thread on that page that will say, hey, can you answer the sports report trivia question? Attempt to answer here. You'll be entered in the contest. You also have to like us on Facebook. You have to like that Grizzly Productions page. But it's free for you to do. But I'm telling you what, you're not going to want to miss this contest. Close to $1,000 from these three devices that you can possibly win. They all work together. Is tandem the right word? No. If there's three, what would it be? Unison?
Mm-hmm. Yes, in unison.
These three devices work in unison, and it is fantastic. So
that's right. We're giving away sets of these three devices together,
right?
Just to clarify that the thing that that we're giving away, it's three devices all together. You have six chances to win one.
Exactly. So what is that? So what's six times three?
18.
So you have eight. There are 18 of these devices being given away. Anyway, so I just wanted to get that little plug in there because it's MLB time, baby, and I was down in
What does that mean?
Major League Baseball playoffs.
Oh.
And I was down for the Phillies game last night in Philadelphia last night.
Where are you now? Funny you didn't drop by my house.
Yeah, I had no time.
Funny.
Yeah, we were down there, had a blast watching the Phillies take the first game in the series.
So it's the World Series already?
No. We're in the playoffs now. So National League Division Series, Phillies playing the St. Louis Cardinals right now. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. Hey, I was really pissed that I didn't mention this last week because it was a sad week earlier last week because one of my all-time favorite bands officially announced they're breaking up.
Mm.
And I can't believe we didn't talk about it last week.
Mm.
But of course, REM.
The Beatles. Oh,
yeah, The Crash Test Dummies.
Mm-hmm.
Really upset. After 30 years, REM decides to call it quits.
They're like, we've run out of songs.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for a really long time.
I mean, part of me was, it was a little melancholy, right? I mean, here's a band that I grew up with, and I felt like every one of their albums was released at a point in my life when I needed it the most, you know? It was, you know, whether it was the songs on the album somehow thematically were tied to what I was sort of feeling and going through in my life at the time, you know? Mm-hmm. The album Monster was certainly a, you know, an album about identity and trying to find yourself and all of that. And I remember that, I think it came out my junior year in high school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hearing that, certainly, you know, everyone's struggling with that, right, during their high school years. What am I? What do I want to do? Who, you know? And so it was sad. And, you know, I think just after I had gotten my license, right around that time, of course, Automatic for the People came out. So I was constantly, you know, driving, listening to that album, which to me is still one of the great albums, you know, of all time.
That was really their peak, in my mind. Now, yeah. I'm not quite the REM devotee that you are, but Out of Time and Automatic for the People, to me, was sort of like the high point. Like, it was just sort of like a...
It was the high watermark, yeah.
Downward slump from there for them.
They had a little... Yeah, they had a few peaks at... Well, not peaks. They had a few... A few hits after that, of course.
Sure.
Certainly the Man on the Moon movie. You saw quite a resurgence there during the Andy Kaufman movie. Jim Carrey playing him. But you're right. But, you know, interestingly, they had recorded, of course, the New Adventures in Hi-Fi album. Mm-hmm. They recorded that. They took a page from Pearl Jam on their tour. And while they were on tour, on the Monster tour... before Bill Berry had his brain aneurysm and had to leave. Actually, still, because he took a break. They took, like, canceled concerts for 3 weeks or whatever it was. And then they resumed the Monster Tour. They recorded the album during sound checks. You know, Michael Stipe was like, hey, that's kind of a brilliant idea, right? You're on tour for 18 months. Instead of wasting all that time, let's just pop out during sound checks with songs we may have written on the tour bus, you know? Mm-hmm. And so almost as soon as the Monster Tour had wrapped up, they were able to put out a new album. To critical acclaim, you know, New Adventures in Hi-Fi was universally regarded as one of their better albums.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have, like, the big hits on it that you probably would have, you know, an Out of Time or Automatic for the People. But I think after that, it started to the downward skid, of course, because that's when Bill Berry left the band.
Mm-hmm.
And then that record Up that they released was not a big success for them.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of down. But, you know, I was a big fan of their album Accelerate, which came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
That was a really, really good album. And then their most recent album was not all that strong. So they're hanging it up.
Mm-hmm. And did they cite a particular reason, or did they allude to the fact that Stipe's about to do a solo album, anything like that?
No, they just basically said, hey, you know, thanks to all of our fans all over the years, we just realized that, you know, now is the time to say goodbye. We're thankful that you've stuck with us for so long, and... you know, to all of those who you know who've been touched by our music, we're thankful and thank you. And that was basically it. So, you know, the stipulation, of course, from Bill Berry, the drummer, when he left the band after New Adventures in Hi-Fi, he said, "I'm going to leave. You know, I want to leave. I want to go back to my farm in Athens, Georgia, and just live out my days on my farm."
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the behind the music of that. I just was struck. Something about it was so amazing to me. That he was content with that, right? Just waking mm-hmm. up and taking care of cows every morning after being in REM.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess that's what you do, right?
After 30 years, you get it out of your system, I guess.
Well, I mean, at that point, it was, what, 15 years, right?
Oh, I see.
You know? I guess you're content with that, right? And you're just like, mm-hmm. I'm just going to live out my days. I couldn't imagine not always being feeling like you're being drawn to that life, that music, you know, wanting to get the band back together again. But anyway, I just was struck by that. So yeah. And then, you know, his condition was, if the band breaks up, I'm not going to quit. I'm not leaving the band. You have to stay together. So they continued on, and they plodded along. But yeah, it was sad. I couldn't believe when I saw that. It was, you know, sort of bittersweet, I guess. I saw it and I said, oh, wait a second, that's sad. But no, I guess it's time. You know, you don't want them to crank out more and more albums like the Rolling Stones. Like, give it up already, you know?
Right on. Get out, Rolling Stones.
Get out while you can, you know?
Right. You should have been gone 41 years ago, Rolling Stones. Holy crap, have you stayed past your welcome? I was watching from time to time. I like to watch Family Guy, which I find to be quite funny. And in a particular episode, they obviously spent a lot of money and somehow acquired the rights to show in its entirety Dancing in the Streets, the David Bowie Mick Jagger duet from like 84 or 85.
Oh, God.
And yeah, like at one point, Peter just says, he says something about, you know, oh, that's not the gayest thing ever, this is. And then they showed that whole music video intact in the middle of an episode. And I just thought, you must have so much money, Seth MacFarlane, that you can afford to do things like that. But I have to admit, I was laughing. And he was also quite good, was Seth MacFarlane, if you saw recently the Comedy Central roast of Charlie Sheen, which aired maybe in the last 2 weeks, give or take. He's been the roast master of the last two or three of these.
He's been hosting it?
He's the roast master now. Yeah, Seth MacFarlane, the creator of Family Guy.
Seth, I thought you meant Charlie Sheen, sorry.
No. And he's very good. He's very good in that role. What struck both my wife and I about these roasts, which are, you know, I mean, they're viciously funny. I mean, they're dirty and obscene and vulgar and horrible in that way, is that they seem to be going this route where instead of it being a panel of comedians, you know, the dais, as they say, is not made up exclusively of comedians. They now bring in celebrities for whom I'm guessing comedians have written material who attempt to deliver it, usually with dire results. Perhaps most prominent in this latest batch was Mike Tyson roasting Charlie Sheen by reading poetry.
Ew. What are they thinking?
It was funny only in a perverse way, you know, like a why is this on TV kind of way. And the last one, I don't even remember who they were roasting. It'll come to me in a second. But they had Hulk Hogan stand up there and like read jokes that had been prepared from of David Hasselhoff. It was the roast of David Hasselhoff. And I just thought, like, what's the idea here? Other than like train wreck type curiosity, like, what is the idea behind having these celebrities attempt to read, you know, another comic's material with any like type of authentic voice or any sense of comedic timing? You know, like, of all the things in the world Mike Tyson might be good for, I don't know the comedic timing is on the resume.
No, I mean, you know how much he had to be wrangled for that movie, The Hangover, that he appeared in, you know. Mm. You can tell those scenes must have been painful for the director. Mm-hmm. Like, let's nail this. Let's, you know, all right, let's do that again. Like, not quite right. Or he probably was scared to even, you know, tell him to do it again. Like, mm-hmm. It was almost probably like an Ed, what's his name? I always get that director's name wrong. The Plan 9 from Outer Space director.
Ed Wood.
Ed Wood. Sort of like, that's great. Thanks, Mike. Let's print it. You know, like he's too scared because Mike's going to punch him in the face. Like, I'm not doing that take again. It was good the way it was. No, it wasn't. You were looking at the camera the whole time.
Right. Yeah, I think one thing that did come across is, you know, obviously when a new roaster comes up, they take a pot shot at everyone else on the dais before they go to work on Charlie Sheen. And people were just savage in going after Mike Tyson. And that was like in the back of my mind the whole time, like, of all the people to antagonize in the world.
Right.
Like, Mike Tyson's got to be like top 10 of the list of people you don't want to antagonize. But he was laughing. He seemed to be a very good sport about it.
He bit a guy's ear off, for crying out loud.
Tyson himself, now again, this line might have been prepared for him, but he had to say it anyway. In roasting one of the other roasters, he said, yeah, your routine was so awful, I wanted to bite my own ears off. And I at first I was like, that's an awesome line. And two, like, big props to the comedian that had to put that in front of Mike Tyson and said, you know, like, I prepared this line for you. And Tyson was like, I'll do it. So
he handed it to an intern. Hey, can you
exactly.
Can you take this down the hallway and drop it off in Mike's green room? I want to see what he thinks of this joke.
Yeah.
I'll be upstairs in the commissary.
Yeah. If you come back.
Right.
I know what's happened. So at least in that regard, right? I mean, obviously, I think a lot of things he's done in his life are downright deplorable. But I'll give him some props. He seemed to be a really good sport as people were, I mean, just unbelievable. They flambéed him on that Charlie Sheen roast. And Charlie Sheen obviously took a lot of heat as well and seemed to, you know, he seemed to be a fairly good sport about it. And I contrast that with, out of perverse curiosity, I watched the roast of David Hasselhoff. And when people would take shots at Hogan, he seemed like either he was going to cry or he was going to get up and punch somebody.
Who is this?
Hulk Hogan.
Oh.
Because they not only were taking pot shots at him, but, you know, his daughter, Brooke, who had kind of like a failed singing career, You know, like, they were just relentless. But that's how those things are, right? Like, I mean, if you've watched one for even 5 minutes, you realize it's just going to be like, it's savage. They're going to cut you to the bone, you know, and it's going to be really obscene as they do it. And I don't know if anybody really warmed Hogan up for that, because a few times he really looked like he was about to pop out of his chair and, like, head over to the pedestal or the podium and whack somebody. So,
yeah, I don't know that. I always get uncomfortable watching those types of shows.
Really? Why? I'm going to talk about a show that makes me uncomfortable. Go ahead.
Something about seeing someone squirm in that way makes it uncomfortable for me. I mean, it's because I'm just not a fan of confrontation. And to me, it's like the highest order of confrontation. Mm-hmm. There's a microphone and an audience, and you're about to rip someone apart. Mm-hmm. You know, so I tend to shy away from confrontation as much as I can. So in that way, and especially when I think when things hit below the belt, right? Like,
and this is two straight hours of that,
right? And I don't know. Like, I think when I watch those old Dean Martin roasts, which to me are hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the show, and those things used to be on like an infomercial that they would re-rack, and it'd be like an hour of them just showing highlights from the Dean Martin roasts. And I would watch it every time. It would be on my like my TV at my desk, like overnight when I was working like at the Daily Buzz, and I'd just have it on, and it would be like 3 a.m. and I'd watch the whole thing. And every night it was on, and I would just sit there and listen to it while I was doing my work, and it always made me laugh. And I thought, I don't need to buy this DVD because I've seen all of the highlights, and I can't imagine that there are more highlights than this than what I'm seeing in this hour-long infomercial for it. But it wasn't like character eviscerating back then. It was, you know, Frank Sinatra making fun of Dean Martin for being drunk, Don Rickles poking fun at Frank for stealing all the women. You know what I mean? It was, I don't know. It was just a smarter level of roasting.
Sure. You know, it was maybe a little more tasteful.
Right, yeah,
you know,
that's a better
obviously there's no accounting for taste in 2011, but you know, one of the stars of this, and I suspect behind the scenes he's like the chief organizing guy, you know, is comedian Jeff Ross.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who is a very, very funny comedian. He was dressed for some reason as Muammar Gaddafi on the roast of Charlie Sheen. So what did he say? He actually had a line about it, like as he was going to the building, he said, because tonight I have to roast a nutbag, I thought I'd dress as one, or something like that. But he's usually the highlight for me, is Jeff Ross, because, well, of course, like everyone else, it's exceptionally tasteless and quite dirty. Like, his seem especially sharp. You know, like, he really just, no one is spared the blade with him. And I admire that about him, because he's not a particularly successful comedian, you know? Have you ever seen his stand-up specials? Like, it's like he can't even fill a club for his TV special.
Right.
But and he's also, like, the only link that remains constant in all of these roasts. He's always on the dais. So I have to believe that he's somehow instrumental in getting these things done for Comedy Central, but he's always the highlight for me, is that guy.
By the way, a little side note with Jeffrey Ross. When I've gone to see David Letterman's show, he, I think, has been the warm-up comedian. And he may actually have been – people correct me if I'm wrong. He was at one point one of the top writers for Letterman.
I believe that. I believe that to be true. These roasts previously you know, there was kind of like the same set of people that you always saw, right? Lisa Lampanelli was always on there. That Whitney girl who's been spun off into this sitcom NBC's trying desperately to get people to watch.
Right.
And I don't know. It might be funny. I couldn't tell you. She used to be savagely funny on the roasts, but something tells me what she used to do on Comedy Central after 11 p.m. and what plays in primetime on NBC are two worlds apart. They're gone. And they've been on occasion they're replaced with funnier people, but not always. But Jeff Ross remains intact on the dais. So, yeah, you'll want to make sure the kids aren't in the room when you're watching the roast of Charlie Sheen, as if that were ever in doubt. But, yeah, that's very funny. And it's playing on demand right now. You can dig that up.
Did you see, by the way, I wanted to talk to you about this before we go, but maybe we can wait till next episode, because I haven't watched it yet. But I've been meaning to, and I thought it would sort of be in our wheelhouse, if you will.
Oh, the wheelhouse.
Wheelhouse is back, baby. Terra Nova.
Ah, yes.
Have you watched this thing?
No, but I've heard a lot of talk about it, and you're not the first person to say to me that we would that we would probably like it if we watched it.
I thought I sent you an article, too. I may have sent you a review.
Indeed you did. Indeed you did.
I read a review on my way in on the train last week in some newspaper, and then I, you know, but this is not the review. The review that I read... Well, the one I'm going to read for you now, the one I read gave it a pretty good review. I think it was a Wall Street Journal review, really liked it. But here's a review that they, since the Huffington Post rips content from everywhere, let me see where they pulled this thing. Let me just give you the first paragraph here. No, she writes for the Huffington Post, Amy Lee. She writes, Terra Nova, it's sort of this like dinosaur show. She says, Terra Nova is a glossy, generally entertaining action-adventure mystery that will appeal to fans who enjoy dinosaur fight scenes, touching family moments, and suggestions of deep mystery. It's Steven Spielberg produced. And are you familiar with the premise of the show?
Is this the one where like they get in the time machine and go back in time to avoid whatever, like an apocalypse?
Right, they get stuck. They're trying to go. They get an offer to go to Terra Nova, which is an untouched Earth, reached through this time portal. That they get to go back to Earth when it's not polluted or anything like that.
Yeah, I've seen commercials for it.
But they get stuck there, I guess, and I don't know. But it's like a 2-hour pilot. And by the way, the pilot, I guess, is free on iTunes. The 2-hour pilot you can download for free in HD on iTunes. So you want to watch it on your iPad or your Roku. You can watch it on your iPad for free download. I've downloaded it for my flight tomorrow, and I haven't watched it yet. So, but what are your thoughts on it?
I haven't seen it either, but I like the premise. And, you know, the teasers, which can always be a little misleading, they seemed really intriguing. It sort of seemed to me like another grasp at the, can we come up with another Lost?
Right. And apparently, because they get beamed back, or they go to this time portal, and there's, you know, dinosaurs and whatnot, and there's this like little village that had been set up by the previous occupiers. So it's like Lost in that way. And they also come to find out that there's this other encampment of other folks, like the Others, but they're not called the Others. And, you know, they're on like the other side of the island, so to speak, and it sort of sets it up for this intrigue about why are these individuals there, and why aren't they part of their group, you know? So, yeah, I'm going to watch it this, I'll report back, Captain, after my flight. I'll tell you how it is.
Much appreciated. We're going to pause for a moment and thank a show sponsor of ours, and when we come back, I suspect it's Guilty Pleasure song time, right?
Yeah, I think we're out of time, and, you know, Philly's playoffs are on right now, so, and plus I got to go to bed for a 3 a.m. flight, so.
Lovely. So, unfortunately, John, who sent in this Wilson Phillips suggestion, I'm afraid this doesn't top Roxette. So, before we get to that, before we play a Guilty Pleasure song, we should pause here and thank long-standing Grizzly Productions sponsor, Cobra. Don't you think we should thank Cobra?
I love Cobra.
That's right. And now, you've heard us evangelize on behalf of this device of theirs that both Clayton and I use, their iRadar system. Because not only is it at the forefront of the industry, right? They're the industry leaders. They're on the cutting edge. It's won all kinds of awards. It's really just this very simple, sleek and compact laser, radar, and red light camera detection unit that through Bluetooth technology pairs with your smartphone and gives you up to date information about driving hazards everywhere you go. It's powered by this ingenious and revolutionary Aura driving hazard database. And you can find out everything you would ever want to know about this incredibly clever little device that is not only going to probably save you from a ticket or two here or there, but make you an all-around safer and more alert driver when you visit CobraiRadar.com. And we would not want to neglect that device, as both Clayton and I use it. However, as the holidays draw near, those geniuses over at Cobra have come up with something else. And so, we thought we would take a moment to tell you about their newest, their latest, their greatest invention, the Cobra Tag System. And this is of particular benefit if you're one of those folks who oftentimes misplaces your smartphone or misplaces your keys. Clayton, do you understand how this ingenious little device works? It's like magic from the future.
Yeah, it blows me away, and I don't know how amazing it is. It just blows me away. I don't exactly know. But here's all you need to know. What happens? You put this on your keychain, right? This little tag, and it just looks like a normal keychain. And then if you lose your keys, This is the brilliant thing. You've downloaded the free application for your smartphone that pairs with it. So let's say you can't find your keys. You just go to the app on your smartphone, and you press the little button on the app, and it beeps, and it lets you know where your keys are. It also helps you locate them. It's brilliant. But it also works in reverse order, too. So you've got the Cobra tag on your keys, and let's say you lose your smartphone by accident. Well, what does it do? It pings the app that's on your smartphone and lets you find your smartphone. So it works in reverse order, and it'll let you know, hey, if you get within, you know, if you, since it works over Bluetooth technology, you get away from a certain distance, it'll beep and let you know you've left your phone somewhere. Hey, you better get this thing. It's brilliant. The Cobra tag system is the newest and latest and greatest invention from our friends at Cobra Electronics. What a great Christmas present, too. It just absolutely, you know, you're running out the door, you're a busy parent. You got stuff to deal with. Can't find your smartphone. Where is it? Oh, it might be buried in the couch somewhere. And you always lose those things, right? When you need to leave, you get out of the house quickly. It's not when you're sitting there with a beer in your hand and your hands down your pants with a bowl of chips on your chest when you lose your smartphone.
Does that happen to you a lot?
It does, and then I know exactly where the smartphone is. You know, but when you're racing out of the house, you know that's when I usually end up losing these devices. Go to Cobra.com. They're fantastic, and show your love. You know, it's a great device for the holidays, and as we near the holidays. So our thanks to Cobra Electronics, makers of the Cobra Eye radar device and the Cobra tag system.
They make them both. And by visiting that website, of course, you can find not only great retailers that carry them, but locations online if you're an online shoppy and you like to do that sort of thing. All that information is over at Cobra.com.
Indeed. So it is time for our guilty pleasures, and we got a lot of great submissions this week. Thank you very much. But I don't know, man. To Mike's point on Roxette, I think you might be right about that. So Roxette, of course, I think they're Swedish, right? Am I wrong about that? They are a Swedish group.
Yeah, I think you are right about it. You know, I don't know that off the top of my head, but you might be right.
Not quite sure, but I think it was
Google it.
The single that we were talking about that was submitted.
They are Swedish.
They are like those Swedish fish.
Mm-hmm.
The single Dangerous, I think, was like, what, 1988 or something like that, or 1989, in that somewhere in that time, or maybe 1990. It was like late 80s for that.
Released at the end of 1989.
I do remember that, heading into like junior high school, hearing that album. What are your thoughts on it? Break it down. You know some history of this song?
No, I really don't. You know, my favorite Roxette song, I don't mind saying it, is Joyride. And that was a number one hit, okay? There are some more embarrassing ones. I think Listen to Your Heart's a little more embarrassing, and definitely Fading Like a Flower. How Fading Like a Flower ended up on that weird Michinoku Pro theme disc from the late 90s, I'll never know.
Oh, yeah.
But, right, they're probably best known. I think The Look is probably, like, one of them that they're better known for.
Yeah.
And I really don't have, like, a, you know, a strong feeling either way about Dangerous.
The video is crazy, though. Do you remember this video?
No, no, not at all.
It is ridiculous. Do yourselves a favor and go watch the video for Dangerous from Roxette. It is ridiculous. And the pants that what's her name is wearing.
Oh, I don't know their names.
Oh, man. Here's a little sidebar note for you. This song was held out of the number one spot by Paula Abdul's song "Opposites Attract." So, this reached number two on the Billboard charts. So there you go. Here it is. Without further ado, from longtime Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe fan Natalie Morris, previously Natalie Del Conte. Here it is. "Dangerous" from Roxette.